Well, good evening, everybody. Please come in and take a seat and let's get underway. Welcome. My name's John Reed. I'm a volunteer here at Life as a business champion, and I'm delighted tonight. We've got Dean Pendergast come to join us. He's an educator, he's an entrepreneur, and he's a tech startup. So tonight we're going to talk about starting a business or having a business. Okay, we've done a series on wealth creation, and the first time I had my mate Paul Snell help us, and we talked about shares, property, cash. This time we're going to talk about starting having a business, and next time in November, if I can get it past Pastor Tim, we're going to talk about cryptocurrency. Okay, so slightly out on the edge there. And look, the definition, a couple of definitions for you tonight before we start. First of all, this is not financial advice. These are just a couple of fellas chewing the fat about business and what we did wrong and where the opportunities lie. Please get seek serious advice rather than listening to us. In terms of defining wealth, this is about accumulating assets over our life that keep working away while we're asleep, okay? So things like property, having a business that works away for you while you're sleeping, shares, etc. At the moment, it probably doesn't include my cryptocurrency or vintage motorcycle collection or... Anyway, that's a dream. The other definition I want is having a business. So if you go away for 4 to 8 weeks and have a break and you come back and the money's still flowing in, you've got a business. If it's all dried up, you've got a job. Okay? So a couple of definitions there for you. And with that, I'll just hand over to Dean to give a little intro.
Cool, thank you. I'm really excited about that go away for a period of time and have it keep working because on Sunday morning, I will be travelling over the beautiful Pacific on the way to Rarotonga. To finally have a holiday that we were supposed to have as a family in lockdown last year. So my kids have had three cancellations of the holiday, postponements. So we're finally into the one that's going to go, and we're all excited. Then all the stuff happened in Wellington. We're like, no, but it looks like it's all through. So my name's Dean. I started off as a school teacher, moved through to starting a music school. We had 5,000 students in New Zealand and Australia every week in lessons. And that was an amazing journey. Sold that in 2015 and then invested some of the money from that to start what is now Enrollmy.com. And Enrollmy is a booking platform for after-school care holiday programs and other lessons and classes that kids do. And so we're now in what's called scale-up mode. So we've gone through the heavy lifting of getting started, getting everything going, and now it's just about growing as fast as we can. So that's a bit of my background, and I'm looking forward to chatting with John today as we hopefully chat through some little pearls of wisdom that you might pick up on the way that can help and encourage you.
So the other day I was chatting away with Cap, with Sam at Cap, and here's some numbers he gave me around the average Kiwi in their financial position. It doesn't make great reading, does it, when 70% have less than $5,000 in their savings for emergencies, etc., and this would exclude KiwiSaver, and 30% have less than $500. I guess that includes children and all ages, etc., but all the same, you know, when you have 18% in financial trouble and 43% vulnerable in New Zealand, one of the biggies for us is talking about money. Do you know we just don't like it? I was listening to Seven Sharp the other night, and Sue and I were watching it, and they said 58% of couples don't like talking about money. That's terrible, isn't it? And when one in five families, middle-income families, are spending more than they earn, you know, it's really bad. So if I can encourage you to have those discussions with your wider family, let's talk about money, let's talk about the mistakes, let's talk about, you know, not having bad credit card debt, etc., and just trying to help and educate each other. We've just had a wonderful God, Money and Me series from Pastor Paul, and I love this. This is going to have a global message, not just for us, and we're blessed to have this. And we're going to talk about the 10% savings and the 10% spending and thinking about having a business. And look, if you're early on the road of getting financial freedom, get on board with the Life Budgeting Tool just so you get things in order. Another really good place to go in terms of resources is the sorted.co.nz website, and they have six clear steps to as a financial pathway forward, just getting your safety net in place, your insurances in place, your KiwiSaver settings right, so you've got a bit of a retirement up or a good retirement plan, getting on top of bad debt and setting your financial targets, which you share with your spouse and work them out together, and then you celebrate them when you hit them. Okay? Good. And this is, when Paul and I were talking last time, we just flashed back to something Sam Stubbs said from Simplicity. It's not that complicated, guys. It's not that hard. Get your KiwiSaver right and get your settings right so you're going high growth with reasonable fees. No credit card or negative debt, or get on top of any of that. And then, I know this is tough, getting into your first home as soon as you possibly can, but I'd throw in there, have a budget and get a savings plan in place. Okay? So just really simple, and this is the sort of stuff, if we're talking with our wider community, folk up the back, please come in and get yourself a seat and get comfortable, particularly you, Greg. You've always been a bit of a troublemaker. Last time we met, we talked about how you invest your money. What do you do with your money when you've accumulated some? My daughter calls it the camembert moment. So when you're a poverty-struck student, you can only just afford the cheapest cheese, but then suddenly you get a decent income, and then you can afford the camembert. Get a savings habit and get investing it. The problem is, for my parents and when I was growing up, you whacked your money in the bank at 7% and you didn't have to worry about it. And those days are long gone. So if I put, and my lovely daughter is sitting over here, and you know we've got different amounts of time left on our runway. So if I put my $1,000 invest, I reckon I can get to 2 or 3% return. Get it up to 2 or 3,000 in my lifetime. She's got a 40-year runway ahead of her, and you know if she can get a decent return. Every $1,000, Ems, what would you like? What sort of return would you like? Okay, so the definition of wealth is just a bit more than what I've already got. Okay, so Emily's response is what I want is a lot, basically. You know, probably 8% is maybe achievable long run in the share market. What do you think, Josh? 8%, Nick, good numbers? All right, but go for more. We had a competition in our men's group the other day. Who got the best return on their KiwiSaver in the past year? And Bruno over here, what did you get? Nearly 17% return? You won. Nick, what was the number? 12.1%. Okay, so he cracked the 12% return. So if he keeps that up for 40 years, Bruno, you're going to have 90,000 forever. Anyway. The key here is this Mark Varakis comment, there's no such thing as risk-free stewardship. To get a return, you're going to have to take some risk. And you can take some risk by investing in property, investing in shares, making sure you're getting good advice at every turn. But what I'm coming to is the other way to make a way forward is to invest in your own business, to have a business. And there's a couple of throwaway lines in having a business in New Zealand. The boat, the batch, and the BMW is one of the reasons to have a business. And the other rule of business in New Zealand is have fun, make money, sell the business. Okay, so that was my pathway. And now I don't have to work. But most of you in this room say, yep, I'm in. Sign me up today. The boat, the batch, and the BMW sounds good. I'm quitting my job and starting an online business. And Dean will talk to that. And look, it is fantastic. The risk... The rewards are great and dividends are wonderful where the company pays the tax and you get a tax-free paid dividend that flows when the business is successful. But the risks are enormous and business is tough at the best of times. All those nod who agree, business is tough at the best of times? Yeah. What do you think, Peter? Yeah. Okay. So for those of you who have been in business for the long haul, you know there's forever challenges forever coming at you. And so there's enormous risks and challenges. And one of the things most of us in the room here, and I've talked to some of you about starting a business, is we don't often have the skill set we need to do it on our own. It's a bit rare. So we need others to come and we need to partner with others from a funding or skills or whatever. And three little tips there, if you're looking and you're praying this through, integrity, intelligence, and energy is what you're looking for in your partners in business. You don't want partners who just are really intelligent and really smart, but just lazy. So just finding the right partners. And there's a little equation there for success. If you've got a great product or service that you've developed, if you've got a clear vision and good financials and a strong team with good leadership, you've got a good chance of success. Okay? So with that echoing in your ears, I'm now going to hand over to Dean for the next slide.
Cool. Well, it's always good, you know, however long you've been doing whatever you've been doing, to sit around with people like John and others that have had experience, because just hearing them speak and the enthusiasm for what they do is really exciting. And I think this speaks to this first slide. I often, probably once a week, get contacted by people who want to grab a coffee or something and just talk about their idea or what they'd like to do. And often when we talk about managing ideas, I say this really important phrase, which comes into it in the next part as well. There is more money in the world than there are good ideas.
Amen.
You may know it, and or you may not know it, but there's huge volumes of money sloshing around the world all the time. There is more money in the world than there are good ideas. And there's more good ideas in the world than there are people who can do anything about them. So if you've got an idea, it's not the idea that's really important, though that is a portion of it. It's really important that you become the person who can do something with that idea. Now, often when you start with your ideas will be around what you know, your sphere of knowing or your sphere of understanding, what experiences you've had in your life. For me, it was school teaching. I started as a school teacher, and during that time, I started teaching guitar. And I was like, wait a minute, I'm earning more teaching a guitar than I am being a school teacher? This doesn't make sense. And so then I systemized what I did and franchised it. And I could make that step out of that because that was within my sphere of knowing and understanding at the time. And then once I franchised it, I had to take another step into, okay, what does it mean? My business didn't rely on me doing the job anymore. It relied on me managing the job and then bringing others in to manage the job. And so there's these different steps you take along the way. So if you've got ideas, even Elizabeth, I was speaking to her earlier tonight. She was speaking after this. What she's doing now is based on her understanding in the medical field that her background's in. And so you've got background, you've discovered some things, some ideas and understandings that you have in the world, little pieces of value, little nuggets that you've uncovered where you think, there's value in that. I could sell that, or I could productize that, or I could do a lot of things with it. And but that's great. That's the seed. But the really important thing is who you are now and who you will become as you water that thing and grow it up to what it can possibly be. And that's one thing. And you know, the person, John and I were talking about this before, the person I was when I started school teaching compared to the person I was after I started the music teaching business and franchising that, compared to who I am now, is astronomically different. Not so much on my skill set. I've still got a wide skill set and can do a lot of things. But my ability to implement what needs to be done has totally changed. Yep. And that's the key thing. And that starts first with your own leadership yourself. So if you're going to start a business, you're going to be a leader. So you're going to be probably leading other people at some stage. But that starts first by leading yourself. And it gets us into this next slide here, which is around the dream and the vision and what you want to do. As John's alluded to before, you can speak to this, John. Being in a business is, for those of you who've been around in life for a little while, you realize that it's not all roses all the time. Would I be correct on saying that? Yeah. Okay. It's not all hot chocolates and marshmallows, you know. Sometimes someone makes a coffee and they put salt in it instead of sugar, okay. And so things can get tough. So how do you work through those kind of things? And it starts here, right at the start, with the vision of what you want to do. And more than that, who you want to become. Now, one of the key things I love is that idea that God says that he sees things that aren't as if they are. He knows you. He knows who you are going to become. Why? Because he saw you before the creation of the world. Is that true? Before the creation of the world, he planned you out. Not only that, did you know that with DNA, you can have 10 to the power of 480,000 possible humans can exist. That means if you're here today, it's more of a miracle that you're here than if you're not. And God knew that before the world had begun, because he was creative and amazing and incredible. And when you come up with a business idea, I think about this in business, that business is creative. And one of the key creativity things about that is that you've got a plan. It might be an existing business you buy, and then in your mind, you can see where that thing can go. It can be out here, and you can see it. You can even experience it. You can wake up in the morning, and you can go, wow, I feel what it's like for my business to be at this certain place. The problem with that, of course, is that your business isn't currently at that certain place. And I give free license to my staff. We run a pretty flat organization. Free license for them to talk to me and kind of bring me back on track a bit if I'm living too far in the future. Because that's the problem that I have, is that I'm experiencing out there. But right now, there's these things that need to be done. So strategy is, a vision is massively important, but the strategy is the bits. What am I going to do between now and next year, or now and next week, to move myself to what I can see out there in the future? Not just what I can see in the future, but what I can experience in the future. Because you know what it could be. You've seen that bit of value. Of course, the next bit is that not every bit of value that you see is going to be valuable to everyone else. Because sometimes you might look at that little bit of nugget under the rock at the bottom of the river, and you go, oh, I've discovered this thing, I've got this idea, I've got the skills, I'm going to really make it run. But then you realize that this thing that's really important to you isn't really important to lots of other people. Okay. And, I've had, I could say two, one on the way and one definite huge successes, but I've also had a couple of little things along the way, little things that I've tried that haven't worked out. Little nuggets that I've picked up and thought, oh yeah, everyone's going to love this. Turns out they didn't. Okay, that's always a good story, eh, John? And so when you're thinking about that thing, and we have a thing that we work through called the focus framework. And the focus framework takes your idea and it takes it through a robust methodology. And it really asks it the hard questions. And it takes it out to the world and it asks at the hard questions. And we're going through this process with an opportunity we have at the moment in Enroll My, and at the end of it, we'll make a call, yes or no, do we pursue this? And we can make that call with confidence because we have spent 3 months going hard at this process, and we will know if this nugget is really a bit of gold or it's just me seeing a bit of fool's gold at the bottom of the stream. Of course, the next step on from that, and just speaking to that as well, is it was because I'm the vision guy, I've had to learn to take the steps on the way to get there. And one of those key things is the financials. I grew up on a farm where, and it was called John and I talking about this, you know, families that talk about money or don't talk about money. The bank manager would always rock up to the farm and Dad would lay out the books on the front of the 1984 Toyota Hilux. You know, the one that Barry Crump drives up the cliff? Remember that one? Yeah, yeah. And he'd open the books to the farm, and the bank manager would go through it. And whenever my dad wanted to buy another farm, he could, because the bank manager knew what was going on. And so I grew up with that kind of mentality. But because everyone else in my family's gone farming, and I've started a tech company, so that kind of speaks a little bit to where my skill set lies. Doesn't lie with a hammer or a shearing. Then I knew that I needed to get people on board that helped with that. And one of the first people I did, I had a good mate who was a CFO of a company, and he was between jobs, and I said, I tell you what, after I sold Music Hub and I put a stack of that cash in to get started, I got him alongside me and I said, right, I'm going to need you in this little bit of time, because I'm going to need to get a whole bunch of skills that I didn't have before so that I can understand the metrics of what a software company, and particularly a SaaS company, looks like. And he was really beneficial. And I think that was right at the start. I'd already had plenty of business experience, but I was going into a new realm that I didn't really understand. And having him alongside in that early period was massively beneficial. While I speak to that too, team, when I first started my music school, I was just a school teacher, you know. And so while I'd had that background of farming, I'd be 10 years in a classroom, and I ran my classroom like a tight ship. It was awesome. Okay, but I didn't know the nuances of accounting systems and things like that. And I taught at a Catholic school, and behind us was the Catholic church, and there was a guy that was the head of music in the Catholic church. And he played guitar, and because I played guitar, we'd jam out at some lunchtimes. And it turns out that he was a fix-it man for Shell Oil. So if any rig or any station, the finances were going bad, they'd just send him anywhere in the world for a month, pay him astronomical money to go there and fix the problem. And he'd go there and he'd get to the root of the problem and he'd fix it. And here he was, I was just jamming with him playing guitar. And I think back, when I think back to those early days, you know, like he was my grandfather in Auckland because he was able to really speak into my life and speak the word of God into my life and also speak financial principles into my life at that time, you know. And that was just me sitting on the curb by the outside my classroom playing guitar with him. And those are the kind of people that God can bring along, and if you're open to them, can really speak into your life and give you, you know, great insights. And I remember he passed away a few years ago, and just being massively thankful to the Lord for what a great guy he was and the road, steps he had on that road. So that's part of the team, the people that come along you don't even expect. And then you've got to build a team, and we'll talk a bit more about that later on.
Yep, so critical to have a good team on board. Guys, there's five seats up the front here, a few in the back.
Straight
here,
to the front.
If you want to come on over rather than sitting around the back, come on, Hamish, come and have sit yourself down and come on up, make yourself at home. So quite a bit of interest from the floor around the boat, the batch and the BMW. People keen to say, yeah, I'm going to chuck my job in tomorrow and start a business. Just a couple of little warnings, because we have to give you the balanced view in life. Between 2010 and 2015, that five-year period, Ministry for Business and Innovation said 58% of single businesses or mum-and-pop businesses failed in New Zealand, and businesses with more than five employees, 43% of them failed. Okay, so big reality check. And four out of five medium to small businesses, when you come to sell them and the people think, I'll be rich when I retire, I'll sell my business, they're unsaleable because of all the IP. It's all around that person and there's nothing there to sell when they're gone. So just, you know, if you're within 10 years of wanting to sell your business, make sure you're thinking deeply about how you're going to shape and mold it and is it a saleable business. A tale of 10 businesses. In 2006, I became managing director of a New Zealand company. I bought shares in another 9 companies that were part of the group. And here we are 15 years later, and of the 10 companies, only 3 of them succeeded. And they could cross-fund between businesses, so the money wasn't a problem. And I look back and say, 2 of them suffered significant losses, 3 of them flourished, and when I'm saying flourish, they paid a dividend to the shareholders. Okay, so 5 of them ticked over okay. They paid for the boss, for the employees, etc., but they never paid a dividend to those that had invested into them. And just a very quick observation, if I have to say what went wrong with the 7 companies, I'd have to put it down, number one, to leadership and getting things done and having the big vision and being able to implement strategy. So the quality of the people at the top was one key, and the lack of market research, like, is there a big enough business here to sustain this when we get there? So the nugget of gold turns out to be a bit of fool's gold rather than real gold. So the 2 keys, do your market research before you launch, make sure you've got the right people on the bus when you do go and you've got the energy and passion and enthusiasm to drive it. So what sort of business should I start? Or if I'm already in a business, what am I doing? Am I doing the right things? And that little graphic there, what are you good at? What do you like to do? What do you have specific knowledge about? The guitar player, great example. And if stuff's a curiosity or a hobby to you and you find you're spending half a day and you go, where did the time go? I just lost myself in this. This is just like a game or a play to me. That's a good sign you're on the right track. Within your sphere of influence, your specific knowledge, or something that you're passionate about and go, I can get knowledge and I can learn as much as I can. Everything I need, the skills that I need to make this happen. So, and ideally, combine your vocation and your hobbies. That's awesome. So my mate Bruno over here runs a bike shop, the Auckland's longest, oldest selling longest and oldest standing independent bike shop. He just loves bikes and he loves engineering, he loves people. So it's kind of a hobby for him. And he can indulge that. And I'll talk about him a bit more in a minute. And you can go two ways. You can either, if you're an accountant or a lawyer, or a carpenter, or a mechanic, you can hire out your time. You can set up a business and sell yourself by the hour. Or you can be an entrepreneur and start something totally different and kick off a new business. The best products and services, and I love Dean's, there's an inexhaustible number of opportunities out there, but the best products are those that solve a problem or meet a need that the world is desperate for. Okay, so if you can see and what you're looking for is the blue ocean opportunities. Rather than the crowded harbour where all the other boats are and all the competitor, it's getting out in the blue ocean where there's nobody else, where you can see some unique, rare opportunities that you can do your thing and be authentically you. Nobody can compete with you being you. There's nobody else who matches your skill set or your approach. So something unique and different where you can spot a gap and say, I see an opportunity, I can make a difference here. And obviously, the products that are available to everyone and used by many is ideal, but that doesn't mean there's not a huge market for niche opportunities around the world. This is a huge slide, so understanding that in the old days, we just employed labour, we employed more labour to do the job, or if you're like Logan, capital is your big lever you apply. So you go and look for a new development property, you get the capital, you use all your skills to develop that. Or you have some products or services you want to take to the world, you distribute it through maybe a distributor that's got 100 stores throughout New Zealand, and you leverage what they bring to the table. Or the whole new piece is the internet, the last 20 years. And the pandemic has just turbocharged this whole opportunity. So what is it, 10 biggest companies in the world are digital media companies now. And you can scale, you can get to the whole world from your living room in New Zealand if you've got some unique products and opportunities. But what you do is you do the whole lot. So again, using Bruno's example, he has a little 3D printer or a CNC machine, and he makes unique little bicycle products and he exports them overseas. So he's got a digital, from his little setup in Howick, he's got a digital reach way beyond. He's using the internet to leverage in the way he could never, to a community and organisation he could never get to otherwise. And the leverage you can bring now is just enormous. So if you're a big digital company, instead of having a help desk, you just have an army of bots, digital bots, program encoded to answer all the big questions that come up, etc. And so as you look across your business, you go, how much leverage, what leverage should I be applying? Lord, just show me, what should I fund to actually leverage and make me more efficient in everything that I'm doing and the approach that I'm taking? So understanding how much leverage and what leverage to bring to get to a much bigger market in a much more efficient way. Sorry, one more comment on that. It kind of like the five big banks, they've just closed 85 branches around New Zealand in the last 18 months because they look at this and go, we can cut out one and two, we can close a heap of branches, cut out the labour, and we can just go improve our digital offering. So if you can write code, and you know, that's a marvellous future. Is using the leverage you can get through digital.
I think one of the interesting things is that there's a lot of, initially can come across doing a tech company or doing a tech thing as kind of one of the glamorous things to do going forward. There's also a massive amount of learning in that as well. And one of the key things coming back to people and the vision there as well is that one of the great successes we've had with Enrolmy is that there's three founders and an investor. And the other three founders at the start, or the other two and myself, we had a no elephants in the room policy. That means if there was you know how things can get out of hand and it starts escalating negatively pretty quickly. You know that those situations, you're in the room, the relationship's starting to break down, and suddenly words aren't being heard and all that kind of stuff. the best way to stop that is to deal with it straight away. So when we have our meetings, and we've got a business advisor who's here somewhere as well who helps us out, sometimes we have those meetings, and it's robust conversation. Because you've got to have those robust conversations, and you've got to be called out. And the other two guys are totally, they're totally free to call me out, and I get called out plenty of times if I'm living 5 years in the future and not dealing with something right now. And that's one of those key elements of these kind of things. And in the tech world, you can get easily carried away with things or the latest hype or the latest thing that comes along. And it's really important to keep your focus on what's important. I've got this goal that we're heading towards. What's important right now? What is the one thing right now? Like today, I had two things this week. And before I fly off to Rarotonga, two things need to happen. And most of today was on those two things. Because they had to happen. And so that's because the vision is clear and we understand what we're doing in that place. We have our board meetings every month. We meet with our investor and his advisors. And so we have to sit down and we have to say, this is how we're rolling. This is the direction we're going. This is our plan. And his advisors, if we thought we were tough on our plan, put them in front of his advisors with like a combined 300 years of business experience, and they'll pull those plans apart if they're not on the money. And also, that's not a bad thing. If they pull them apart, is that a bad thing? No, it's not, because it's helping us get better at what we're doing to be able to do the best job with that. And I think one of the things that all this talks about, and John's been great chatting to him about things as well, is that the number one thing that gets in the way of business success is ego. Would that be true? You know, if I walk into the meeting with the two other founders and I'm like, I'm going to do it like this because it's going to be my way or whatever. I mean, it's never going to get anywhere. But if you're humble enough to go into those places and when we sit down with our investor and his advisors and we're humble enough to listen and to learn and to bring all the learnings and the intentions that they have, which are intentions of goodwill for our company, then speaks to us and encourages us as well. You know, just a little insight along these lines too. We're doing well for time there, John. Just before COVID hit, so February last year, I was on a Zoom call with our investor, it's a couple of his advisors, a couple of medical people, and all the companies they invest in globally on a call. And the medical guys said, this is what's going to happen globally. And literally, point for point, they were on the money. Exactly how COVID's played out across the world is exactly what they said in February 2020. And then the business advisors came on and they went through every company and they said, this is the impact on you, this is the impact on you, and this is the impact on you. Now, because we run childcare lessons and all that kind of stuff, they were like, it's going to be catastrophic for you. I'm like, far out, thanks a lot. That's really encouraging, thank you. But of course, there was something more to what we were doing than just our software and just all these other points that were coming in. And that's the fact that the three of us, as the founders of the company, pray at the start of each of our meetings. We believe that what we're doing is offering a service to the world that is part of our mission and the calling of each of us individually, and that we've been brought together to make this thing happen. And our investor is an incredible man. And while he's not a Christian, we believe that he is a gift in that sense. As part of this mission, and he brings wisdom and incredible wisdom to the table as part of what he does as well. And all those things all contribute together, and that meant that during that COVID, when we came out the other side of COVID, we'd signed three of the biggest deals we'd ever signed. And I'm just waiting for when he gets all those people on the Zoom again, just for them to go around and say what actually happened. And that's part of that team. It's part of the joy of what we do. That I've got the other two founders, they're good friends, but they're good friends that can say what they need to say when it needs to be said. And I think that's massively important in these things. We can riff on leverage of the internet. I spoke to this before. When you start a business, or even if you're in a business and you want to move in a certain direction, you don't know what you don't know. Is that true? You don't know what you don't know. When I started in Rolmai, when we all got together, I just exited a successful business. I was on top of the world, and And I remember sitting in my little home office when we started out next to the head of technology, and we'd hired this Korean student as our first sales guy over the summer, you know. And we were just getting started. And I was like, far out, what have I done? I've just sold a profitable and moving ahead business, and I'm now sitting back in my home office next to my mate and this guy I've just met. I'm looking out across a beautiful tennis court. It was a beautiful tennis court we were looking across. And I was just thinking, what have I done? I'm back at the bottom. But you know what? When you love it, when you love the hustle, when you're in that place, you're like, I'm going to learn a whole lot, and it's going to be hard, but it's going to be awesome. And that is the key thing. I didn't know what I didn't know about tech companies, neither did the rest of us, how to run tech teams, how to be efficient. And that kind of ideology of this glory of running a tech thing, I'm going to start my tech thing up. There's so much more to it than just that. If you're going to sell online, cool, there's plenty of good stuff to do that. But if you're going to build something in tech and do something original in tech, there's a massive amount of understanding and learning in that space that I had to learn and have learned and continue to learn over that time. That's different, though, to if you're going to sell something or do something along those kind of lines with the internet. So it's cool.
So a couple of slides to go. So a couple of tips. One foot in reality and one foot in faith and hope for the future. So just make sure you're grounded. You're doing your numbers. You're testing them. You know what you're doing before you take the huge leap. And you're not going 2 feet in into the future. And you're fully grounded, particularly in those starting years. Fair comment, Nick? Yep.
Can I show you something there, John? When I was a school teacher and decided I was going to make the leap, I came home and told my pregnant wife I'd quit my job. Okay. Now, there could have been possible marital problems at that time, but we'd been preparing it for a while. So while it was sudden, she understood what was happening, and we all understood as a family that it wasn't risky.
Don't penny pinch. So you've got to spend a dollar to make a dollar. You have to be really smart. Keep your fixed costs as low as you possibly can, and invest heavily where you're going to get a good return. So just you need incredible wisdom and judgment and prayer around this. You know, when it comes to marketing, we know 50% of every marketing dollar is wasted. We just don't know which 50%. And so there's always a risk with what you're doing. So just be really sensible in terms of how you're investing and what you do. Every one of you have got a business here already. Just give yourself a rating of, are you better at building or are you better at selling? And rate yourself personally if you want to start a business. Am I a person who can create and do something from scratch and develop and build something awesome? Or am I somebody who I can persuade and market and sell? I had one of the companies associated with here at Life the other day saying to me, we build all these awesome products. We're 10 years ahead of the industry we're in. They haven't caught up with us, but actually a heap of the products what we did 10 years ago are languishing because we're kind of like moved on to the next new thing and the next thing and the next thing, and we haven't consolidated the sales for all the good stuff. So in that case, they would say we're better at building than we are at selling. So if you're going to start a business, think deeply about, am I better at selling and marketing on the front end? If I am, I've got to get people around me to help create, because there's nothing worse than either having a crappy product, being good at selling and getting frustrated, or having an awesome product and being useless at sales and not be able to create demand and get the product humming and have the line of funding you can to invest. So am I good at building or selling? The whole faith and integrity thing is so critical. So when you're ethical, you draw long-term players with you because they get to trust you with time. And your suppliers and your customers go, I worked out a good deal with them last year and the year before. They're open and honest with me. So you drag long-term players and you start doing more and more good long-term business. So ethical players build and compound on their relationships long-term. And there's a young lady in the room here who said to me, oh, I'm so frustrated, I've been going 5 years and I'm only here. And I go, 5 years in the space of a business, you know, when you're talking 10, 15, 20 and you've got those relationships that endure and you just grow year on year, it's so good. And the final slide, sorry, Dean, did you have anything you wanted to chip in on there? You're happy?
No, pause of wisdom.
Yeah, okay. So yeah, give it, chip in at the end of this. So I'll just start with the bottom one first. So you heard Dean right at the start saying, have I got the energy and drive and enthusiasm to power this thing forward, this idea forward? So having the leadership to be able to take people with you, that accountability people, what you're looking for is a team around you with wisdom and judgment. People can look at it and say yes to that big investment, or hey, John, have you seriously thought through that or doing this? So what you're looking for in your board, in your team, and your advisors is judgment, and particularly from a faith perspective, getting quality people of integrity and vast experience helping you. That's an enormous help. We talked about leverage, and we could have several sessions on leverage and the incredible leverage you can apply to a business by getting the right tech at the right time, and there's apps for everything, etc. But getting that bit right, can't reinforce enough. And as I've talked to so many life business people, the one thing I find that is lacking a bit is the 5-year, 10-year vision and plan of where the business should go, because by and large, people are so busy keeping up with the day-to-day challenges that the long view is kind of like, oh, yeah, okay. So just getting a clarity of vision. So clear your diary, get away with your spouse and just dream and scheme about where the business could go in the long haul, and get a clarity of vision, as Dean's talked to. And then the final bit is, I just love the whisper that Pastor Luke was talking about on Sunday, where we still ourselves and we start listening and tuning into the Holy Spirit. And, you know, he was sent here as our helper and our guide and our advocate. And three ways the Holy Spirit works with us on a day-to-day business, and this is not the only three by any means, but three ways in my experience I've found. One, he brings opportunities across our path that we may not otherwise have, people and things. He brings ideas across our path, so we have, in the midst of chaos and challenge and hardship, we can come up with some solutions or ideas for new innovations. And he brings collaboration. He brings people across our path at the right time and the right season that we can work with and collaborate with. And sometimes we get impatient because we want all of those to happen at the same time right now, and sometimes they take years to come to pass. So we're going to wrap up now, but we've got about 5 minutes left for questions, and then we're going to make our way across to hear Dr. Elizabeth. So any questions from the floor? And Cam, how do you want to do this? Do we have a microphone or somebody to run around? Okay. I've got Josh has volunteered up the front here.
Don't be shy either. Just there's no silly questions, that's for sure. Real hard one. Someone come up with something super hard.
I'll just sneak around. Here you go.
So you've obviously, I missed the beginning, sorry. You obviously started a business and sold one and started another one?
So my background was school teaching for 10 years, first business for 10 years, sold that, and I'm halfway through the next 10 years for the next one.
So how do you know when the right time to sell is?
I was over it.
That's it.
That's it. In my heart, I was like, that's it. I've done it. I've done my bit.
I was the same. Ditto. And Sue and I talked about this, and I said, I'm done. 2 years' time, I'm out of there. Let's get on and sell the thing.
So if you still love what you do, you should just keep on keeping on.
Well, I mean, you're in an amazing place in the world, you'd have to say, if you love what you do. Like, you know, it's amazing. And I think the only reason that you would keep on keeping on is if you had a real sense in your heart or something that you had a new thing you needed to move to. That was maybe that would be a reason in that case.
Mm-hmm. Like, do you have like a downtime during your startup years? Like, how do you deal with those downtime? How do you remotivate yourself?
It's a really important question. I think you need to understand yourself, and each of us have been given a personality to it that God's given us. That there's weaknesses for us to grow in and strengths for us to use. But for me, one of the things that God's made me able to do is to be able to handle heavy loads with little stress. So it means I can go really hard for long periods of time and handle heavy loads relatively well. The downside of that is that that it does have an effect, but I don't feel it until halfway through a holiday, and then I might sleep for 2 days or something silly like that. And so you've got to understand yourself and realize how you work as an individual, and not let yourself or not have people around you that helps you in what's special about what you do, because it's not the same for everyone. And having that vision definitely helps for that, and having the people around as well. John, you speak to that.
Thanks, Dean. Sorry, we're going to have to wrap it up there, but I hope you enjoyed this evening. Come back in November for another round, and if you quietly make your way across the other hall, if you want to have a chat with Dean or myself, Dean's going to be around afterwards at the Smales Farm desk, and I'll be floating around. Thank you.